Yes, it's time once again for Rule Zero. This is the Rule Zero Podcast, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. Let's do this.
Yes, the Rule Zero Podcast. I am Chris.
And I am Pete.
And we are here because we are the gamers who talk about gaming. And this is the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming, which, in my opinion, is a very fortunate matchup. Because the other day I was listening to a podcast where welders talk about gaming, and they didn't know anything.
Yeah, no. You see, and it's things like the dice mechanics escape them. It's just, it's awful.
I mean, who even talks about THACO anymore?
Seriously. And, especially in this day and age.
Yeah. So anyway.
Oh, wait, we do.
Sometimes. It's unfortunate, but true. So, so how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm well, and how much gaming have you been able to get accomplished?
Since the last time we spoke, practically none.
Again?
I'm sorry to say.
You are slacking.
The biggest problem that I'm facing is that I work at a job now where I don't get out of work until 7 o'clock at night.
Ah.
And by the time everything is taken care of, it's nearly 9, and that's bad for me. Most of the games have already been going on for about 2 hours at that point.
Yeah, there's that.
So
I attempted to remedy the situation of not being allowed to play games at work by entering the Paizo RPG Superstar contest, which is, it's too late to enter now, but it is a contest that Paizo runs every year, or has run every year for the last 4 or 5 years. They put out an open call to submit, every year so far it's been submit a magic item, a wondrous item. And they pick 32 submissions based on quality and how it appeals to the judges. There are four professional judges, and then it goes to a semi-professional panel.
Nice.
And didn't really say anything about my item. They said boring, rejected. It's submitted anonymously, so it's not like they know whose item is what.
Fine. But honestly, the gauntlets of testicles, I'm not sure that people would go for that.
Mine was a girdle of revolving gender.
Oh, well, there you go.
I kid, of course. I actually had my submission was a magic item, which was a trowel that you would go to another country and you would like dig in the dirt and use this trowel, place the dirt on your tongue, and it would change your language. Like you would lose your old language and you would gain a new language.
I see.
So it was something that was not really done with wondrous items, but I had figured out all of this. You know, this is how the system works, and this is how the magic goes into the trowel, and it uses the tongues spell, and you can only reverse it with a limited witch. What I really missed sight of in developing this item,
yes,
was the fact that all it's doing is adding basically a skill point.
The only thing that I could think of while you were explaining that was magic goes into trowel. Trowel goes into dirt. Language is in the dirt.
Our language. Yeah, we're going to need a bigger trowel.
Ain't that the truth? We're going to need a bigger wheelbarrow.
So it essentially boiled down to you gain a skill point by, basically learning a language in the Pathfinder system. But you also are kind of giving up a skill point, too. So it's a net gain of 0 for this magic item. And I had it costing 12,000 gold because I had figured you're using the tongue spell. You have to be this level to do it. It's this powerful. It's like you need a wish to undo it, and it's really strong magic. But, mechanically, it's a skill point. Swap.
Bam.
So I got smacked down, and good on them for being forthright in saying so.
Oh, there you go.
But the winners were really interesting this year. They're really interesting every year. That's how they get to be winners.
That's kind of the idea, yes.
Yeah, and in the second round this year, they did something different. They had to design an organization. I didn't get that far, and I haven't been keeping up because I'm out. So.
Oh well, there you go.
So that was my gaming news. Other than that, business as usual. Running two games of the same campaign.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Same old going on.
Because you're the man.
Yeah, and my personal gaming news, I've bought the Eclipse Phase core rulebook.
Excellent.
That is interesting, and I'm never, ever going to be able to play it because there's not a single soul in this area who's going to run it for me.
Well, if you come up to visit for a holiday, by golly, I'll run it for you.
Excellent. I will try to make that trip, because I'm really bad at running sci-fi. I don't feel comfortable in the genre running it.
It's very funny, because I have to say, having kind of gotten away from the old saws that I belong to, being D&D, Pathfinder, you know, fantasy gaming, playing some post-apocalyptic stuff, you know, things like that, I'm much more comfortable in sci-fi than I am in fantasy.
Really?
Yeah. Unless it's, I did run, as I believe I said before, a first edition or advanced Dungeons & Dragons game where I ended up with a TPK.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it was, that was pretty much the last time I felt, or the first time in a long time, I'd felt really in the zone running a fantasy campaign.
Wow.
The time before that had been like 2 years prior when I'd retconned, what is it? Hall of the Hill Giant mm-hmm. King or Chief. Hall of the Hill Giant Chief. Yeah.
Uh-huh. G1. The giant one.
Right. And I had retconned it for 3.5. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I actually wish I were in that campaign, because that sounds really neat.
It was.
I never got to play those modules in first edition, because every game that I played in was a homebrew campaign throughout the first edition years and second edition years, and well, third edition was pretty much me running every time.
So. Right.
I don't think I've been in a game that's lasted more than a few sessions. Oh no, that's not true. I wasn't a Tuesday night game for a while, but. Games tend to not last very long for me.
That's unfortunate.
It is, because I've always wanted to play a 1-2 epic character.
Oh, wow. That would be impressive as heck.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, that even, I mean, I ran a 3-0 campaign for nearly 3 years, with some breaks, mind you, but still pretty consistently for 3 years, and they ended up, I think, 12th or 13th level.
That's funny.
So I still don't consider that to be epic.
Yeah, that's not really. I mean, that's where it starts to become a headache to keep track of everything, at least in third edition and on.
Yes.
But that's where my campaign got put on hold so that I could run this adventure path.
Mm,
and,
gotcha.
And the person that I then essentially said, oh, yeah, sure, I'll run something for you, is now taking a break from gaming. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, so now I'm... Yes. I'm running for people that weren't actually part of the original proposal. So,
huh. Good for you.
Yeah. What can someday. I say? It's something that I'm always doing, is like always having to run the games. So,
well, like I said, at some point someone will run for you, and it will be more than just a one shot that I run when I come into town.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm always looking. So.
True. You hear that out there, you guys?
Yeah.
He's always looking.
So all six of our listeners, if you happen to be in this area.
And wanting to game.
And want to game and aren't in my family.
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
And are willing to run.
Yeah. No, actually, I'm not sure. Not even sure who's listening anymore.
Everyone is.
Yeah.
We just don't know it yet.
We got 33 hits on our website in one day the other week.
You mentioned that.
I was astonished.
Does it show demographically where these things are coming from? No, or where they linked, how they link to us?
I know that I didn't check the page a single time that day, so it wasn't me.
I check about once every 2 weeks, so it wasn't me.
Right. So something happened that I guess maybe the show went out and... You know, enough people were interested to look, but I'm kind of surprised. 33.
Does it show how many times the cast itself was listened to, or can we presume it was 33 times?
I'm not sure.
Hmm. Interesting.
There's a way to get those stats. I suck at this, and I hate WordPress, like you would know.
So what you're saying to me is that we could know, you just don't want to do it.
If I could figure out how to get those stats.
I'll find out. I'll look at the stats. We can for what are we on now? Episode 4?
I believe this is episode 4.
Okay, so by episode 5, I will find this stuff out. I will be the detective.
Okay, so this is A New Hope, and you have until the end of Empire Strikes Back.
Fair enough.
Okay.
I was picturing it more like you were Ra's al Ghul and I was Batman, and so I had to figure out what your plan was before you resurrected the Lazarus Pit, but I like your reference better.
Good. Okay.
Because
I don't get yours. Oh, I know it's Batman. I saw that. I saw Bateman Begins. But I'm not too up on the Batman villains, because I never really considered Batman a very good superhero.
See, conversely, I think he's the shiznit when it comes to superheroes.
Yeah, I know.
Probably like
he doesn't have a superpower. It's money! Money's not a superpower!
It is when it's, he's got that much money.
Yeah.
It's truly fictional proportions.
Yeah. Money and super science are the only two superpowers you need.
I agree.
That whole stretching thing for Reed Richards, that was kind of superfluous.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so anyway, that's all I've really got to say about my gaming recent history. How about you?
Yeah, sadly, I think there's nothing really more for me to say about my recent gaming history.
You've got to do something about that.
I'd like to.
All right.
I know. I'll get a new job.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Get a job gaming.
Ooh. Can you do that?
Unfortunately, it's difficult.
And most of it's computer gaming, as I recall.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah. All right, so why don't we go into the news?
Okay.
It is time for the news. Okay, it's time for the news. And I apologize for what I said about Batman not being a very good superhero.
You don't have to apologize to me. He's your opinion, no matter how wrong it might be.
He's an okay superhero, but I gotta say, if it came to a fight between Batman and Superman, there would be two hits. Superman hitting Batman, and Batman hitting the sun.
No, you see, I disagree, because Batman's way smarter than Superman, and he's not even ever going to get into a fist fight with him. That's just the way it is.
Then he's not a very good superhero.
Then he's a fantastic superhero, because he's using his brain rather than his mitts.
No, I get that he's using his brain, but the thing is, see, Batman, he talks to himself. Superman can hear that. So he knows Batman's plan.
For what it's worth, Batman doesn't talk to himself, okay? That's considered inner monologue.
Okay, then why is it blue? I'm going to make sure Clark can't get within 500 miles of me, and like already Superman's behind him. He's like, Bruce, stop talking to yourself. Bam! Into the sun!
Again, it's so sad that you're so wrong, because as we all know, very well know, that when the White Martians invaded the moon base, and they took out Superman early on, and the leader sat there and said, now what we have to do is get that pain in the butt Batman. Superman laughed in his face, and he said, you're an idiot, because Batman would have been the first one I would have taken out. He's the only one without powers, and yet he plays in the big leagues.
That's the money.
Telling you, it's the brains. It's the super science.
Yeah. Oh, I wish my parents had been killed so I could be super smart and science would be super easy.
But you see, he was smart because his dad was smart. We already established that.
Uh-huh.
Genetic thing. It's all about eugenics.
Yeah.
Look at the X-Men. All about eugenics, I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's kind of distressing, actually. But anyway. what bothers me about X-Men is that children of mutants who inherit their parents' powers are still called mutants. I'm like, nope, sorry. That's not a mutation. That's inheritance.
I was about to say, not anymore.
Yeah, so anyway, hey, do we have any news or anything?
I do. I have some news.
All right, I have no news. What's your news?
Well, you see, when we were talking about X-Men, that was kind of my segue into the fact that Mark Weiss has put out the Marvel Heroic role-playing game, has put out a preview of a couple of pages showing how dice mechanics work.
Oh, excellent.
And it's pretty nifty.
Tell me about it, because I know the game comes out on February 14th. No, wait. Wait.
I was about to say, it comes out on Valentine's Day?
It was slated to come out on February 14th, but now the Amazon release date is listed as March 13th.
Well, there you go.
That's not good.
I think that's good in and of the fact that they opted not to make this coincide with Valentine's Day.
Well, what am I going to ask from my wife for Valentine's Day now?
I think it's better I don't answer that question while we're recording.
All right. So anyway. So what'd you find in this dice preview?
So what I discovered was that basically you do the dice are from 4-sided through 12-sided.
Okay.
Okay.
No 20s and no coins.
No 20s, no coins. Which is a great story that I can share sometime when we're not recording. So the dice are used to write character traits.
Okay.
And they talk about stepping up and stepping back dice, which you can do with various mechanics. Mm-hmm. Say, for example, you've got a stat that's a D4. You can use things to step it up to a D6.
Okay.
That kind of thing. They do the basic, you know, when to roll the dice, which I think it's kind of like, what is a role-playing game in this day and age, where I don't think you really need to include that section.
Yeah. and yet, as I mentioned, I got the Eclipse Facebook. There is a what is role-playing section in there.
Oh, you see, that blows my flipping mind.
I know. I'm sick of that. It's like, I know what it is. It's why I bought the book. I've heard of these things before. So anyway, go on. Go on. When to roll the dice. I've actually got the document open in front of me, too.
So. Okay, so yeah. So it says roll the dice when you're not sure if your hero will succeed or fail. You want to try something that's bold, challenging, or dangerous. You want to oppose, challenge, or thwart another character. You want to show off your hero's superpowers or cool abilities. So basically, anytime you want to pose, you roll the dice.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that when you want to show off your hero's superpowers or cool abilities. Because, you know, sometimes you should just do stuff.
I agree.
You know, because in the other section here, it says don't roll the dice when there's no risk, challenge, or threat. That, you know, if you're just showing off, there's no real risk, challenge, or threat.
Yeah, but I think the reason why you want to show off is to get a positive reaction from crowd or individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that will lead to something later. Because if you don't, you know, do something favorably for Lois Lane, she's going to write you up for, you know, whatever. Mind you, I skipped, you know.
You jumped companies. Yeah. I was gonna chastise you for it, but you caught yourself.
I couldn't remember Ben Ulrich's name at that moment in time. So that might be why I went there. So then what you do is you collect your various dice into a pool.
Okay.
And you roll your pool. And then you pick.
So you have more than two dice to roll in your dice pool.
Oh, definitely.
Okay, because that's this says it was based on the Serenity system.
Okay.
Not the Serenity system, the Cortex system. Okay. But in the Serenity version of the Cortex system, you only ever roll one or two dice, one for stat, one for your.
No, this is more dice
skill.
Pool. This is more dice pool like with Dogs in the Vineyard.
Okay, I haven't played that, but.
Oh, so basically you get to roll. However you manage to get a handful of dice together, then you roll the pool of dice. Another one that uses a mechanic similar to this is Danger Patrol.
Okay. Yeah, you'd mentioned that last time.
Yes, that it's a pool. It's a pool kind of thing. So, and in this case, what you do is you roll a bunch of dice. You take your two highest. That's your total. Your total shows you how well you succeeded. You can up your total utilizing plot points, which is not on the preview, so I don't know what those entail exactly. And then you determine what your effect die is, and that measures how well your efforts have paid off.
Okay.
So in the example that they give, they've rolled a D10, 3 D8s, 2 D6s, and a D4. They've come up with 4, 3, 3, 1, 3, 1, 3. They choose 4 and 3 for a total of 7. They can buck up. They use a plot point so that they bring in the D4 that had a 3 on it to make it a total of 10. And then they choose for their effect die a D8. And so it shows fire explosion D8, and then it shows somebody diving for cover.
Okay. That seems kind of complicated for maybe it's easier once you run through it.
It's a lot easier once you start to roll it.
Okay.
And then it gives you the rolling dice summary. You
okay.
know, declare intent, add dice to your pool from appropriate traits, roll dice. Anytime that dice come up as ones, they're called opportunities.
Okay.
And it's what the watcher is what they're calling the GM in this case.
Uh-huh.
The watcher can use those for later.
For later. Okay, sorry.
For later in the thing. And then
I thought you were saying he brings the leader in, and then, you know, there's another.
That would be a good opportunity.
Yeah, and he's smart too, probably smarter than Batman.
I'd say he's probably much smarter than Batman.
Yes, yeah, so,
and Lex Luthor too.
So he should be able to beat Batman.
I would think so. He should be able to beat Reed Richards, don't you think?
No.
Well, look at the size of his head.
Reed's smartest one there is.
Yeah, but you see again. I'm just saying, size of brain.
Yeah.
Let's see here, and then you choose a die for your effect, declare total effect die and eye opportunities, and the watcher and another player rolls die in opposition, compare totals to see which side wins.
Okay. Well, that is interesting. I will definitely have that as soon as it is released, which now on the Margaret Weiss Productions website says February 28th publication date.
Interesting.
So I'm confused as to when this comes out, because Amazon said one thing, now they're saying a different thing, and the company's website is saying a completely third thing.
I'm going to go with the company's website for now, and it might be that Amazon's just not getting it until the 13th.
That's uncommon, but it's possible.
So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, so speaking of superheroes, was that all we had to say about that?
That is all I had to say about that, yes.
Okay, speaking of superheroes, did I mention Sentinels of the Multiverse?
No.
Oh, okay. This is a cooperative card game.
Cool.
It is not a collectible card game. It is a it all comes in a single box. There's like 500 cards.
Wow, nice.
There are pre-made decks, each one representing a hero, a villain, or an environment.
Okay.
And you play, each person at the table plays a hero.
Right.
You collectively battle against one villain in one environment.
Wow.
So it can be from 3 to 5 players. I imagine it could be with 2 players, but it's very difficult to win that way. And they are it is made by Greater Than Games, and there you can look at their website, greaterthangames.info. But we played this instead of playing D&D one night, or
okay,
instead of playing Pathfinder one night. And we had a good time. We played it twice and we won both times. And then I was running the other campaign the next day, and two of my people canceled. One person canceled like minutes before the game. One person canceled an hour before the game. And there was one person I already knew wasn't coming. So out of 5 players, 2 people showed up.
Wow.
So now I have me and 2 people and my housemate downstairs.
Right.
Since I know he doesn't listen to the show, I'm going to call him the basement troll.
Fair enough.
Okay. And he had helped us learn the rules the night before, because it was a game that I got for Christmas. And and he read the rules, because he just does that. He sees, ooh, game, must read rules. So he helped us figure out how to play it the night before.
Because how else is he going to lawyer them if he doesn't read them first?
No, that's how he eats, I think. He survives on game rules. But we actually played that instead of playing the Pathfinder game the next day. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys who showed up said, I wouldn't mind if we did this every Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah, because it was a lot of fun to play.
Nice. That sounds like fun.
We lost one and we won one on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So each of the hero decks like has a different feel to it. Like there's one that pretty much gives everybody else bonuses, and he does kind of average damage for himself. But most of the things that he plays in the game will help someone else, and he's like the leader character. He's like a Captain America type.
Gotcha.
And there's one who. His superpower is to damage himself.
Wow.
And then, like, all of the cards that you play during the course of the game is, you do this when you damage yourself.
Wow.
So that's, when he starts out, you know, when he comes into play, his name is Absolute Zero. When he comes into play, yeah, I know, like the Running Man guy.
Yep.
When he comes into play, there are no cards out, so all you can see is that his superpower is do 1 point of fire damage or 1 point of cold damage to yourself. And you're like, well, what is it? Kind of a crappy superpower. But, you know, then you draw your cards and you know, you play one per turn. And, you know, the first one you play may say any cold damage you do to yourself is instead turned into healing.
Oh, I see.
So it's that kind of thing, yeah. And then there's a Batman type character who relies on, you know, putting down gadgets.
Super science and money.
Super science and money. He relies on getting gadgets into the game.
Oh, okay.
Equipment, and you know, he'll end up having, or actually it's a she. Yeah, she'll end up having like a lot of cards down in front of her.
Oh, it's Toy Box.
Okay. I can't remember the name of the character.
Toy Box is a character from Alan Moore's Top 10.
Ah, okay.
Series.
Yeah, I haven't read that, but I imagine so. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was a lot of fun, and I gotta recommend it. And it's a brand new game, like
cool.
A few months ago, and they're now doing so well. They're coming out with an expansion called Brook City,
nice,
in April, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty soon, and
well,
you can go to the website and what they're doing the sort of thing where you can pay money and be in on, you know, kind of pre-order, and you're also funding the print run.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember what that's called, but that's kind of what they're doing here. So
I know what you're talking about. I helped a guy who created a game called what was it? Shock.
Uh-huh.
Contact, I think it was. So
okay.
And it was very cool.
Good.
It's nice to be able to like put in and then get the little gewgaws and special previews.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, hey, I gave you $10, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's
to help you develop this. So
yeah. I believe the Wraith is the Batman-like character. So
nice.
I'm looking at the list now.
I had a friend who had a Batman-like character named the Sturge.
Nice. Okay, so that was really cool. Mm-hmm. So go to greaterthangames.info and look at all. I think this is the only product they have.
Okay.
So it's not like you won't be able to find Sentinels of the Multiverse there, but I really recommend it. It was a lot of fun, and I can't wait till they come out with more stuff.
Rock on.
So that's two kinds of things in news, but there's another bit of news on the horizon.
Okay.
And I think we've all heard the rumblings.
Oh God, yes, sir, we have. I have never seen the gaming community take sides so quickly.
Then you were clearly in a coma when 4E came out.
No. You see, the thing was that there was a lot of bitching for 4E.
Mm-hmm.
This was the battle lines were drawn. Everybody put up their little flags, and they were ready to fight the day of the announcement.
Yeah. Well, obviously we're talking about the announcement that Wizards of the Coast is working on a fifth edition of
the Ultimate Edition.
Yes. They're not calling it fifth edition. They're calling it D&D Next. Mm-hmm. Because fifth edition was a 70s group who sang,
sure.
Wasn't it? Didn't they sing Age of Aquarius?
You're thinking of the Fifth Dimension.
Oh, whatever, yeah. What was the edition? Oh, a new edition, yeah.
New edition, yeah. They didn't sing The Age of Aquarius.
No, they did not. But they probably they could have and done quite well at it.
Yes.
All right, you know what? I'm going to edit that out of the show. So, so I'm not going to look stupid in front of our hordes of listeners.
I'm dying.
We're all dying, Peter.
Weeping with mirth.
So anyway, so yeah, fifth. So Wizards announced the fifth dimension. I'm messing with you. Fifth edition.
Okay.
They're coming
yes.
out with.
Yes.
Which comes out when the moon is in the seventh house.
And Jupiter is aligned with Mars.
Indeed. Okay. So Monty Cook put up a article about about design philosophy on the new edition of the game. And he has basically stated that they are kind of trying to unite the editions. And what does that mean in terms of game design is that they have tried to analyze what it was that characterized the various editions. And he went into great detail about how in third edition, things became a lot more complicated and there was a lot more keeping track of things on the board and tactical movement became important. And so the idea is that third edition players like the tactical movement and keeping track of status effects and stuff like that. Second edition players enjoy the story based telling and a simplistic combat system. Now, I don't really remember second edition being that simple. I remember it starting to get quite complex about then.
Especially towards the end of the run of second edition where they started to come out with the kits and
kits early on, as soon as the Fighter's Book. The first Brown book that I recall was the Fighter's Book, and that had kits in it. And that
maybe.
I seem to recall it almost always being part of the
okay, I didn't remember the kits until about 92.
Well, main reason I always associate it with second edition early on is because that was the first actual munchkinism I had seen in Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, gotcha. Yes.
Because I was playing in a campaign where we were all pretty much stock characters out of the player's handbook, and somebody came in with a fighter who, you know, whereas before, if you were a fighter, you got one attack per round until you got to be about seventh level, in which case you got two attacks
Every, you got three attacks every two rounds.
Three. Yeah, I was going to say two attacks every other round, but it's, yeah, three attacks every two rounds. And then, like, at 14th level, which nobody ever played till.
you got two attacks per round,
right.
That's right. You also had the unusual ability to, if you were in a group of creatures that were less than a hit die, you could attack as many times as you had levels, which I always thought was kind of fun.
Yeah, I had never heard that named until I played Pool of Radiance. They called it Sweep.
Oh, okay.
They said, you know, the fighter sweeps. So if you were surrounded by goblins, which had 1d8 minus 1 hit point.
Or kobolds.
Yeah, kobolds were half a hit die.
Or half a hit die, I always love
that. Yeah, so you got to hit all of them around you. We were all playing pretty standard characters. And this guy came into the game, and he was a friend of the GM, and he'd been away at, like, reserves or something like that, basic training, something I don't even know. Mm-hmm. And he showed up with a character who was second edition fighter, who was ambidextrous, specialized, and I don't even remember what else he had. It's like you had two weapon fighting. Oh, it was ambidexterity, two weapon fighting, and longsword specialization. So
wow,
here my fighter is doing, you know, a d8 plus 2 for strength. You know, and he comes in with his, you know, 1870 something strength, swinging two long swords and doing about 25 points of damage on his turn. Like,
wow,
how the hell did you do that? And he pointed out to me, I took this and this and this. And I'm like, why isn't everybody taking that now? He goes, well, because not everybody knows about it yet.
There you go.
So that was, I don't recall any incidents of Munchkinism in first edition at all.
I think that didn't come out until I'd seen people playing higher levels from Unearthed Arcana.
Mm-hmm.
When you started getting to things like Hierophant Druids and being able to call the Horde and things like that, you started to see that kind of Munchkinism.
Yeah, I never got into high level play in first edition because, you know,
Yeah, you played for 2 years and you were like second level or something.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like, yeah, well, I like to play the wizard or the magic user, sorry. So, yeah, so everybody else is, you know, third level. I'm just making second. So.
Yep, there you go.
But the campaign world that I was in the longest was a very slow campaign, and there were a lot of people in it. He didn't give treasure, he didn't give XP for gold, and we didn't fight very high XP monsters, so it was a very long time gaining levels.
What a Stockholm syndrome that must have been.
You know, it was one of the funnest campaigns.
Yeah, now.
Well, the thing is, it wasn't... Back then, you didn't really look at a chart and say, what do I get next level? So you didn't really think about what level you were. It was just, you played what level you were. You weren't really looking forward to, you know, what you got next level. So.
But at the same time, there's a certain throw-me-a-bone-here moment, you know? Uh-huh. Where it's like, I should be at least fourth or fifth level by now. Come on.
Yeah. Well, we counted XP like pennies. That's pretty much the quantity we got them in.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah. So anyway, I wonder about some of his assessments about, you know, the qualifications, the characterizations of the editions. But it's an interesting article. You can read it. It's on the Wizard site, and it refers to a couple other articles, the New York Times article. The Mike Merles article about, hey, we're making a new edition, D&D Next. We want your input. So, yeah, that's another thing.
I think that's really cool. I also like the fact that they're kind of taking a modular stance towards the way it works, which is kind of nifty. It's a little bit more customizable.
Yeah, well, that was kind of like what I liked about third edition, was that, you know, you basically take abilities off of menus, you know, right. Like your feats. You put the skill points where you want. If you don't want to be all the way good at something, you can spread those skill points out. So you can kind of, I like the customization there.
I liked the fact that in third edition you could have a rogue, you know, and make him a con man.
Right, right.
Or a second story man.
Uh-huh.
Or a thug.
Yeah,
you know?
Rogues
it's
in
all
particular.
Depending on where you threw your skills in.
Right, and rogues in particular were the most customizable as far as that went, because their role was not always, you know, combat defined.
True.
You know?
Very true.
So anyway, those... That's all that's mentioned in the Monty Cook article too. So his design philosophy is trying to make something for every type of player, which, you know, a lot of people felt like when fourth edition came out, they were saying everybody wants this, so we've made this.
Right.
And, you know, there was some degree of that. I mean, in my opinion, they did well on designing the encounters.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, for what it was, they did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't what everybody wanted.
It wasn't what everybody wanted, and that was
right.
The problem.
Exactly. But again, the flip side to that is that I don't think you can make something for that everybody wants. You know, they're always going to find flaw, and especially in a nerd community
mm-hmm.
or a geek community, they're gonna nitpick. They're gonna find the flaws that they hate the most, and they're gonna create blogs about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and at the same time, I think no matter what edition you put out, you're going to find an audience too.
That's true too.
So.
That's very true. And it's an interesting thing because when 4th edition came out, I got to play it, I think, once
mm-hmm.
the entire time since it's been out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a one shot, and it was very, very brief.
Uh-huh.
Prior to me playing it, my friend Judd had said to me, listen, you know, you're not going to enjoy this as much as you hope you're going to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why? And he goes, because there's not a lot of actual character development in it.
Well, is there ever because really in a one-shot? You know, you're not going to develop much in a one-shot.
But even prior to that, because a mutual friend of ours was starting up a campaign.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that I would get involved in it. And he said, he had said, you're not going to enjoy it as much as you'd like because there isn't that much character development involved in it. And he said, he brought up an example of a mutual friend of ours who plays Burning Wheel with us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he went into the 4th edition game trying to basically be a Burning Wheel character, and he kept running into problems with some of the other players, and Judd had said to him, stop trying to be a character and be part of the team. Essentially, and that's what he said to me. He goes, it's great for building team dynamics and understanding things, and he goes, and when you take out a big nasty, you feel great. He goes, but if you want a lot of plot and storyline, it's not going to happen here. So I said, okay.
Because I think that's interesting, and I think, yeah, okay, the game is not really designed into it, or that's not really designed into the game, but I don't really think it's designed into any edition of the game.
I think it was designed into AD&D. That's why I got involved in it in the first place. I mean, one of the nice things about it, and playing it again recently kind of brought that home to me, was the fact that you can really get a feel for the characters in the world more when you have to do mundane shit in that world.
Mm. Well, you know, when a new edition comes out, I either play it or I don't. And in the case mm-hmm. of 4th edition, I played it a few times and I really did enjoy playing, but there was no campaign being offered for me to play in. And so I didn't want to learn a new system to run, and so I didn't get into it very, very deeply. And
well, plus you spent thousands of dollars on...
Yeah, I mean, I've got that huge library of 3.5 stuff, which I'm still, you know, now that I've been deeply invested into Pathfinder, I'm still not using the 3.5 stuff, but you know what? They snuck that in there. You know, it was a gradual thing.
Yes.
And I think I may still have a
devilishly couple... clever on their part, if I may say so.
Yeah. Well, I still have 3.5 legacy stuff in my homebrew game, but for the adventure paths that I'm running, I said, let's only use Pathfinder stuff. We'll see how it does.
Nice.
So that was part of my design setup for the campaign is
right.
Only Pathfinder stuff. But you know, at the same time, I've said any Pathfinder stuff.
Hmm.
So I've had a gunslinger in
nice.
The party. I have a ninja,
which is cool. I love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I especially loved when steampunk was first gaining ground
uh-huh.
before it became, you know, hipster
right
de rigueur. Dragon had this excellent article about, you know, a world where there were fighter jets taking on dragons
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And the way that they shot projectiles was they would drop, essentially what would happen is it would automatically drop a bullet into this repeating gate where it would fall, you know, to maximum velocity. And then it would fire out the front of the aircraft.
Oh, that's interesting, because I did. I designed a little when the Complete Psionics book came out in second edition, mm-hmm. I had designed a few psionic exploits, and one of them was the dimension door that emptied onto itself.
Oh yeah.
And then you would get somebody to fall to terminal velocity and then turn it off.
That was a Grimtooth trap, as a matter of fact.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, you would sit there and you'd keep falling and keep falling, and you did like five falls, and then the spikes came up.
Yep. Well, you know, when you hit terminal velocity, spikes are kind of unnecessary.
I know, but it was just like the extra. It was the insult to the injury.
Yeah.
At that time.
It's like just when you thought your day couldn't get any worse.
Yes, here's a whole spikes. World of suck just for you. Why did it have to be spikes?
Yeah. So as far as adding role-playing to the system goes, I don't think there's no explicit role-playing in, you know, third edition. There's no explicit role-playing in fourth edition. But, you know, at the same time, any role-playing that we've ever done, we've added kind of ourselves. And I've said it before. I don't know if I've said it on the show, but you know, you can really add role playing to anything. You know, if you really want to ponder these imponderables, you can sit there and go, "I'm a hat. Do I really need to buy a railroad?"
That's true.
You know, you can add. You can put yourself in the character of anything that you're playing.
No, it's true. But the flip side is, you can also improve on a classic game by including role-playing into it. So,
Well, I think that's what 4th edition tried to do with the skill challenges.
Right.
By, you know, because not everybody is going to be a very good talker. So if you want a character who's a very good talker, you know, you've got to put, you know, some focus in your diplomacy or your bluff skill or your interpersonal interaction skill, whatever that is in fourth edition. And, you know, then instead of having to convince the GM yourself, you and your party can, you know, roll against skill rolls. And that abstracts it to a die roll, but lets you still do it in role play. You know, you can still say, "I'm saying this, you know, and I roll this."
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it helps people who aren't very good role players, but at the same time, it allows you the role playing. That's my opinion.
Like I said, I only played it once, so I can't I can't give you a full judgment on it. And I certainly didn't play even in a mini campaign, so that I could allow some development to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to get into a fourth edition campaign with other role playing players and see how we do. You know.
All right. You're on. No.
Because every game I've played, like I've played a few sessions in one campaign, but they weren't contiguous sessions. It was like the GM would call me and say, "Hey, a couple people couldn't show up tonight. Can you fill the seat?" And
oh, wow.
I'm happy to. More than happy.
Right.
And I would go, and I had this character that, you know, he would advance it as you know, the party advanced, even though I wasn't playing every time. And I think I played it three times. And, you know, I would go there and I had to have a great time, you know?
Well, there you go. That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah.
When it comes down to brass tacks,
uh-huh.
That is rule zero.
It is. So about fifth edition,
D&D Next. D&D Next.
Yes. There's an article on criticalhits.com, and I'm sure it's mentioned in their podcast as well. It was written by Mike Shea, who I was going to try to get on the show, but he can't talk about it.
I see.
Yeah. He does a little brief write-up on his session playing the new edition with the new things, and he mentions just going through his title bars, he's got the focus on impressions, not a complete picture. So this is not going to be, you know, an in-depth description of how 5th edition plays out, because it's really still in design.
Gotcha.
But he does mention how ability scores are more significant now.
Yes.
Which is one of the things that I liked about Troop 20. Instead of having an ability score from 3 to 18, your ability score was your bonus.
Oh, gotcha.
So, whereas in normal D20 systems, if you have a 16 strength, you've got your +3 strength bonus. Mm-hmm. Well, in Troop 20, that your score is your bonus. So if you have a strength of 3, that's +3 on all your strength rolls. And he says they're doing something similar. Mike Shea says they're doing something similar with 5th edition. His example is, if you want to open a door and the difficulty to open it is 13 and your ability score is 15, you don't have to roll. So, great. You know, it's significant. It makes the ability score matter. He mentions flattening the power progression so that the difference between the levels is not that great. So that, you know, and that the game plays faster. And he mentions returning to the theater of the imagination, and says that his group of 4th edition players were somewhat humbled by a rather low level dungeon, because it required things like old school thinking.
Right.
So we'll see how that goes. I'll be paying attention to it as it comes out, and I'm sure that when 5th edition is released, I'll, you know, get the core book at the very least.
Oh, God, yes.
Because I've got tons of games I'll never play anyway, so what's one I hope
to play?
Well, there
you go. Well, I mean, we can always go to another con and play it there. Mm-hmm. And if it hooks us, then maybe
I almost definitely
we can do a traveling game.
Yeah.
When I'm done in Maryland, I'll run, and then when you're up here, I'll run.
Cool. I had attempted to get into a 4th edition game at Origins 2010, whichever the last one I went to was. And
I think it's 2010.
I was the only one that showed up, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was sad. So anyway, another thing that Wizards is doing is soliciting feedback from the playing community. And this is something they decidedly did not do with 4th edition.
Yes.
Is this a lesson learned from Paizo?
I don't know if it's a lesson learned from Paizo or from indie gaming or what the deal is, but I think it's probably an excellent idea. I think you should always listen to what your crowd has to say.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I found, when I've heard read people in forum discussion talk about play and whether or not a system is working or whether or not a system is broken or what have you, one of the things that they discuss is, you know, how often do you have to hack it?
Uh-huh.
How often do you have to come up with house rules and things like that? And it was interesting to me to see how, like, some commonly played and discussed house rule kind of made it into Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after 3.5 had come out.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know. I think it's just really kind of...
I'm not a big fan of house rules, really.
I don't mind them, but again, it's one of those things where a lot of people kind of use that as the benchmark to show how good or bad a system is. If a system is bad, it needs more house rules. If a system is good,
right,
what have you.
Well,
you
know, the thing like is, that, like, so. I don't think I've ever played a game straight out of the box.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever seen anyone run a game exactly as it's written.
Okay.
I mean, can you think of any?
Other than when I ran the first edition or the AD&D game this past summer.
Uh-huh.
I've never run a game straight out of the box or the way it's written.
Now, I try to keep mine as close to rules as written as possible so that if I get a new player and he comes into the game, he knows what we're playing.
Right.
But I've joined games where I didn't recognize the system.
Right, you know, exactly.
I joined a first edition game. In fact, I think first and second edition, there were so many house rules in every campaign you went to. It was essentially learning a new game every time you got in a new campaign.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I definitely, especially when I was in Colorado, I went between two games, one that I was running and one that I was playing in, and they were essentially the same game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just that the setting was a little bit different, and I think there were only one or two tweaks that we had done that obviously made this my game and this other one his game kind of thing. But for the most part, I mean, it was exactly the same, same deal. I don't know. I just think about the earliest hacks that I've ever encountered, which were in AD&D Dungeon Master's Guide, where you got to convert your characters to Boot Hill and back.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember those tables. They,
yes.
I never actually got to play Boot Hill. I've never even seen a copy of Boot Hill, even though
I've seen a copy of Boot Hill. I've seen a copy of Top Secret, and I've played the original Gamma World.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have seen the original Gamma World. I've never gotten to play it. I do like the 4E skin, the Gamma World skin for 4E.
Yep.
I think it's a lot of fun. I don't think Gamma World was ever meant to be taken too seriously.
I hope not, because if you did, it was way too dark.
Yeah.
Way, way too dark.
So I had fun playing a feline speedster in Gamma World. That was fun. Yeah, we had to negotiate to do this job. This guy wanted to give me trade goods, but I talked him down, and I talked him into giving me a fish. That was good.
Oh, rock on. There you go.
I showed him.
Yeah, you did. And how?
You betcha.
I just realized that with 5th edition coming out as a modular,
yes.
I wonder how GURPSy it's going to be.
That's what I keep thinking. When they mention, you know, you can play as much of the system as you want. And I remember that being GURPS's sort of...
That was kind of their big shtick, really.
Yeah, so that is funny. something to wonder about, something to ponder.
Yes, I thought so as well.
But I know that I don't know how much playtesting they're soliciting the community for. or how much input will mean to them. Because even while they are, you know, asking people what kind of a game they want to see next, this is still, you know, a subsidiary of Hasbro.
True.
And I don't know how much independence they have to design a game based on user feedback.
I'm hoping they're giving more, because I think they're going to see, I mean, ultimately, of course, it's going to come down to which, what part of the market share they're going to have.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But it's also, I think, really important to include gamers in the discussion. And it's one of those things where they're going to have to go through an awful lot of chaff to find the wheat.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't think it's impossible or, you know, necessarily against their best wishes to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'd benefit them hugely if they went ahead with this.
But do you think it's too early to talk about a new edition?
No, I don't think so.
Let's see. When did fourth edition came out? In 2008?
I think so.
So it's really only been 4 years. Summer 2008. So this summer it will be 4 years.
Did you see the April Fool's gag with the fourth edition?
No.
Oh, WotC had released the character sheet for fourth edition,
mm-hmm.
and it only had three stats, and combat was rock, paper, scissors.
Nice. So you don't think that it's too soon to put out a new edition?
No, not at all, actually. I think that seems about right, because if you go from 3.0 to 4.0, 3.5 came out about 4 years after 3.0 came out. So, right. I mean, that
wasn't a radical revision, though.
No, but I think what they were trying to do was kind of rein in the craziness that you could do with 3.0.
Right. And 4th edition also had its supplemental rules, the essentials. Product line, sure. Which are kind of a more streamlined fourth edition.
Well, I think ultimately I feel that with the internet and with the ability to, you know, carry on multiple conversations and mm-hmm. get a feel for what's going on just by listening to podcasts like this one or reading blogs or what have you, going to the forums, you can get a feel that there was a certain dissatisfaction with fourth edition.
Mm.
And I think that D&D Next is probably a good idea, honestly.
I didn't see anywhere near the religious fervor when it went from second edition to third edition. I mean, there were a lot of, you know, there were people who were, you know, pretty consistent haters who, you know, said, oh, well, let's just munchkinism, you know, taken farther.
Yeah, but I think that's because there had been an 11-year gap at that point.
Right, that's kind of my point, is that, you know, second edition was out for a long time.
Right. But that was also during the death throes of TSR,
uh-huh.
and the ultimate, you know, buyout of by WotC.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
I think that's got a lot to do with it. I think essentially what happened was they brought on a whole new gang, you know,
mm-hmm.
and said, "Well, okay, we need to make this different enough so that we can call it our own, rather than being the shades of TSR."
Well, yeah, that's true, and. I know a lot of people were afraid, oh, they're just going to turn it into Magic the Gathering because they're a card company.
Right, exactly.
So there was a little bit of resistance based on that. But I didn't. But you know, when 4th edition came out, the edition wars were really vicious.
I think, and I don't think that's any different from what we're seeing now, honestly. In fact, I think we're seeing even more people just getting bent out of shape.
I honestly haven't seen too much talk about it, so I don't really know. I've
seen a fair amount of talk about it, partially in Google groups and partially on forums.
Okay.
But yeah, I just really feel, I don't know. It's very funny because a lot of the kind of old school gamers
mm-hmm.
who live and die by D&D or what have you, just sat there and originally went, oh my God, the independents have invaded us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, what? How do you draw that logical conclusion? Because they asked you for your feedback and people who are interested in playing for their feedback? Come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
There's no pleasing some people.
There really isn't. But, and I think that's ultimately what it comes down to, what we said earlier, is that you're not going to please everybody, but at the same time, do we want to go kind of gripsy with it?
Right.
So
yeah, and but instead of the GURPS method of, you know, a gaming group uses as many rules as they wish to. The fourth edition design philosophy is that different people at the table can be using different subsets of the rules to make the game as complex as they want, or as simple as they want, which I think is a challenge.
But does that actually come out in play also?
Well, I don't know yet. No one does yet.
So
we'll see.
Yeah. We will see.
Yeah. When fourth edition came out, I remember that I felt it wasn't really time.
Okay.
Because I was still enjoying all of the products that Wizards was putting out under third edition.
Or 3.5.
Yeah, 3.5. Yeah, which, essentially, you look at your third edition books, they mostly match up.
Yeah, okay.
And, there wasn't a lot of difference between first and second edition, really.
There really wasn't. You just had a lot more,
character options, a little bit of
play.
Right.
I think it was with second edition that was the first time I ever encountered a rules lawyer.
Could well be, because that's the first time I saw Munchkinism. So that's
How
did you become a Munchkin in first edition with a party of all the same level? A first level player. How do you be a first level Munchkin in first edition?
You really don't.
I don't think. Unless you say I'm a wizard, so later on I'll be really really powerful. That's
right.
That was the Munchkinism we saw in first edition.
Exactly. Later on, I'll be like Gandalf.
Yeah. Sorry, yes, but did I say wizard again? Magic user. I mean magic user.
But, that's one of those great ones where it's like, that's great later on. But for now, if I sneeze, I could kill you.
Yeah, pretty much. That kobold has more hit points than you.
That was actually a really clever kind of thing that one of the DMs that ran for me came up with for early magic users was basically, if somebody wanted to be a fighter, he would meet with both of them and say, okay, there is a guild of fighters who specializes being the bodyguards to magic users.
Okay.
And if you're interested in being part of this guild and helping out this player character who's going to be the magic user, I will give you an upgrade to armor or weapons or things like that. Mm-hmm. And it worked out really, really well. And it turned out that the dynamic that came up between those two characters was really rather phenomenal. Especially once we got up, in level, once we were around 9th and 10th level, mm-hmm. it was really something else. So,
well, I don't have anything else to say. And you know what? That was all the news.
Well, that was all the 5th edition stuff we were talking about, right? Because 5e was our major focus today.
So I think that is the conversation today.
Yes. Yes.
So I think there will not be a Heart of the Matter section. This has been the Heart of the Matter.
It has been.
So let us close the show with reminding people how they can get a hold of us. And how is that?
By going to rulezeropodcast.com.
That's my boy.
And you can also contact us via email. Christopher.
Oh, you want me to say mine? I am Chris at rulezeropodcast.com.
And I am Pete at rulezeropodcast.com.
Or you can follow us on Twitter as rulezeropodcast.
Or you can also find us on Facebook. And if you do, like us.
Please like us. We want to be
Please
liked.
Do. We like being liked.
And I think that's pretty much it.
I think so.
Are there any other ways they can get a hold of us? They can call our home phones.
They can, but we don't give that out.
No. But if you know us, you probably have that information.
Very true.
You can go to Rule Zero Podcast and join the site and become a member. Like mm-hmm. the three members we've had who are all spammers.
Really? How wonderful.
All of those, I have three signups that came in the last couple months that are all spam sites.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, but
I feel like we're really doing our job.
Yeah. I think we're out. We're getting out there. We're getting.
Reaching our target demographic.
Yeah. If our target demographic is spammers.
I'm presuming it is.
Yeah. So that's it for this week or this episode. Mm-hmm. So until next time, I am Chris.
And I am Pete.
And so's the horse you rode in on. Hey, nobody's giving us any suggestions. That's what I got.
That's true. I'm just thinking game on.
Okay. Game on. Okay.
Game on. Back at you.
Okay. I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
See, talk to you next time.
Okay.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com. Opening theme was written and produced by Rule Zero Podcast, all rights reserved.